Yeah, good evening, everybody. Thank you very much, Hubert, for that nice introduction. My name is Holger Kersten, and I'm coming from the University of Kiel. And it was announced a public lecture in plasma, the universe, the world of plasma. And here are a lot of experts in plasma physics and gas discharge physics. So I will not go too much into the detail of the gas discharge physics. I will only give a lecture how I do it for people, for students, for fun. Just for fun, it's evening, and I hope you will enjoy it, and you, after the lecture, you will not say you have wasted your time. The universe, the world of plasma. And I have added, I will speak about the visible universe, of course. I will not speak about the dark matter or the dark energy, but I'm sure that also the dark matter, if we once know what it will be a kind of plasma. But I will speak now, this evening, about the visible universe, what we can see on Earth, what we can see in the space. And this is a lecture, some of the experiments, some of the things we provide from my group in Kiel, but this is also in collaboration with the Institute of Low Temperature Plasma Physics in Greifswald, where I have been before, till 2005, and the observatory of the Greifswald University, where I was responsible for the education in astrophysics. What is the program for the next 60-70 minutes? Of course, the expert in this room already know what is the plasma, the fourth state of matter, sometimes we say, and I will give only some short notes. Then we will start our journey through the world of plasma. Let's start in the laboratory, and that's for us familiar, to know the plasmas in the laboratories, the gas discharges. So where we can find gas discharges in the laboratory, and some of the applications. Then we will travel outside, looking around to the Earth, where can we find natural plasma here on Earth and in our neighborhood in the solar system. And then let's have a short look to the Sun and the stars, which are compact plasma spheres in the space, of course, and even the space between the stars, so-called interstellar or intergalactic matter, is a kind of a plasma, and I will close with a short summary. Okay. Plasma, the fourth state of matter. All we know, each child in school knows the three states, the solid state, the liquid state, the gaseous state, and this is very common here on Earth in our life. That's normal, that's usual. And we also know how we can go from one state to another state, maybe by supplying of energy. If we heat a block or a cube of ice, then it melts. And if we still add more energy, more heat, then it starts to evaporate. And we have then the free molecules, the free particles. And what happens if we supply still more energy? Then sometimes the water molecules start to dissociate. We have the free atoms, the oxygen, the hydrogen atoms. And if we supply still more energy, then we can even remove some electrons from the atoms, of course. And then we have a mixture of neutrals, of charged particles, electrons and ions. And often they are accompanied by light effects, so that we can call a plasma. And this is very simple, and the typical energies are the bending energies for the solids and the liquids in the range of EV, and then if we ionize the gas, we have to supply typical energies, some EVs, 200 EV, in order to come in the plasma state, what we call the plasma state. But also, if we still add more energy, then we can go another plasma state, then we have nucleons, but I will not speak about that. Of course, I will speak about plasma, what is familiar for us, what we are using in the laboratory. And I will only show you also that experiment. You know, in order to come from one state to the other, we have to apply energy, and I have here a special liquid. This is liquid nitrogen of minus 190 degree about, and of course already the heat of the button is sufficient in order to evaporate this liquid air. So this is the transformation from the solid to the gaseous state. Or if I have such a part of plastics, which is very soft, which is elastic, and if we cool it down to the temperature of the liquid nitrogen, then we can change the state of this piece from a very soft to a very hard, like nothing materials. So this is only to show how to go from one state to the other state by supplying energy. This is simple. And of course, I will speak about the physical plasma, which we use in the laboratory, not the plasma what is sometimes used in the biology, the medical plasma. And this is a German poster for advertising. You have to spend some plasma, blood plasma. But the word plasma, which was created by Erwin Mengele, was taken from the blood plasma, I guess. The Greek word plasma is something mixed transformation of something, and those things. But we will not speak about the blood. Also, very short, some typical plasma parameters and the new quality of the plasma or gas discharge compared to a neutral gas is, of course, this collective behavior of the charge carriers and some resulting properties, like maybe light emission or magnetic fields. Yeah? Plasmas are characterized by the ionization degree. If this is much less than one, it's a weakly ionized plasma. If it is nearly one, then it's a heavily ionized plasma, like in the core of stars. The plasma density, and the electron density, is a very important parameter which people want to know who are working with plasmas, and of course the energy distribution of the different species in the plasma, especially the electrons, the ions, and maybe for the metastables and so on. And plasmas, because they have charge carriers, they can be influenced by magnetic fields, and on the other hand, because we have flowing charges, plasmas can create magnetic fields, and they can, mostly they are accompanied by radiation, so we can use it for lamps, for illumination, and so on. If we look into the space, electron temperature, that means the energy content of the plasma and the density of the electrons, the charge carriers, then it can have a very hot and very dense plasmas, as in the center of the stars, in the center of the sun. On the other hand, we can have very thin plasmas, but also with high energetic content, like in the galactic plasma. And our laboratory plasmas, almost here, where I mark this with a star, in the range of some eV energy of the electrons, and some 10, maybe 10 to 9, 10 to 12, electrons per cubic centimeter. Okay, how to generate plasma? And I already mentioned, if we supply energy, any kind of energy, to a neutral gas, then we can maybe create a plasma. And the most simple thing is to add energy by chemical reactions, maybe by oxidation. Like here, this is a special alcohol which we like in Northern Germany, a Fischergeist, we call it, and it's burning, but this is a very simple kind of plasma. Or if we have the flame of our glass blowers, who made this beautiful tubes, glass tubes, which I want to show you later, then if we add some additional oxygen, it changes the flame, so also the kind or the energy content of this plasma is changed. Or a very simple experiment, the first experiment of spectroscopy, you may see here. Again, this is the flame of the glass blower, and you know what happens. I simply put some salt into the flame, so that's the sodium line, this whole UMD line, which we can see and which is also used in the lamps on the screen, this yellow or orange light. Okay, so by looking into the spectral properties of the plasma, you can get some information about the composition of the plasma and about the energy of the particles in the plasma, and so on. The next, this was by oxidation, power supply to oxidation, and maybe we can switch off the lights. I hope you will not see. And I have here a tube, a glass tube, a simple glass tube, which with some mercury, and I hope it is dark enough. And if I simply shake this tube, you can see it here. There is some light in the tube, yeah? So only the energy of my muscles, this kinetic energy, mechanic energy, with this mechanic energy, I can have not a very bright, but there is a plasma, yeah? So this is very simple, and already Otto von Guericke and Torricelli, they observed this effect when they look to barometers with mercury. This is by friction. Charge carriers are released, and the small droplets of mercury act like small electrodes, and so we can have discharges between the electrodes in this mercury tube. And I added some neon to say it's better than. So then, this is simply by adding mechanical energy. Or we can supply the energy very, very simple by a magnetron, by a microwave. I have here a glass sphere in the microwave, and I switch it on. And just the energy of the microwave field is coupled to the particles inside the bulb, the tube. If I take another, then it's more blue. This is more neon, and this is now argon, typical argon. Color argon is shot. So this is very simple, supplying energy by the microwave field of this magnetron, and this is plasma physics in the kitchen, and every housewife should have it to test their magnetron. Okay, but another source for supplying energy for a gas discharge, or you know, of course, is by dividing or separating of charges, and then sometimes you have a spark between the charge, like in the lightning, and in the 18th century, some people already did these experiments. There was Peter van Musselbroek in Leiden, in the Netherlands, but 1 year before, and that almost has been forgotten. There was a prize in Pomerania, today in Poland, Western Poland. It was Ewald von Kleist, and they called it Kleistsche Flaschen, and here lie in the arms. And that meant he could store the energy, or the charges, he could store the charges in this jar in order to increase or in order to amplify this effect. So you need an influence machine in order to separate the charges and to store the charges. And this is one of the very nice old machine in the laboratory in Greifswald. I couldn't take it, but you know, in practicum or in the undergraduate students, they have such small electricity machines. However, you should this. I have to take this again. So again, this is by friction. The charges are by friction, the charges are created, and on one side by friction, on the other side by influence, and then they are stored here in the Leyden jars, like a form of a capacitor, and then if the charges are large enough and the voltage between the tips, then there is a breakthrough, a spark, like in the light. And with larger machines of this kind, you can get quite large sparks, like here with electric field of some kV per centimeter. I'm coming back. Yeah, here's a photograph of this experiment again. Okay, so that was the idea how to create very simple gas discharges by supplying energy by oxidation, by chemical reactions, by friction, by mechanical energy, or by the separation of charges. But in our laboratories, mostly we take gas discharges which are supplied or which are working by electric fields by a high voltage. And I will now go to show you some very nice experiments, at least in my opinion, are very nice experiments, which are invented, some of these experiments, by my doctor fathers, Alfred Alex Rutscher, who passed away, unfortunately, 3 years ago, and Hans Deutsch, who's still working often in the laboratory. And most of you, I guess, they know Hans Deutsch and Alex Rutscher, and this was a big 2003 in Greifswald, where we have been together, and they allowed me to take this experiment and to add some new experiments and so on. So the idea of this experiment was by Alex and by Hans. But also in Kiel, where I am now, there are some famous physicists or plasma physicists. There was for a certain time Heinrich Hertz was in Kiel, and in that time in Kiel he did experiments on gas discharges, not on electromagnetic waves and electromagnetic fields. This he did in Karlsruhe later, but in Kiel he did experiments on gas discharges. Philipp Lennart, he was in Kiel, he was working on cathode rays, and later Max Planck, he was born in Kiel and he was also for some years in Kiel, and of course his radiation formula is also very important for the description of plasmas. And later on Albert Unger, who was an astronomer, also was in Kiel, and he did a lot of work in spectroscopy of stars, but this spectroscopy table or spectral tables are also used in plasma physics. This is our institute in Kiel. Okay, coming now to some gas discharges, and the most simple thing, of course, is take a glass tube from the glass blower with very low pressure, maybe 1 torr, something like that, put 2 electrodes into the discharge tube, a power supply and a resistor in order to protect the current cannot be too large, and then you can have a gas discharge in a tube like here. This is filled with neon. You can see this is a neon tube, and some former times such tubes are used for advertisement and so on, still sometimes. And this is the basic for a lot of illumination sources which we use. But usually in the fluorescent lamps we use mercury or other rare gases, but there's on the inner part of the glass tube, of course, there are fluorescent particles which can transform UV light into the visible and not this red light. So on the first, if we look for the first time, then we can see it is more or less homogeneous. Here in the neighborhood of the cathode, here's a cathode, at least the people here in the first rows, they can see some structures already. Here's the dark space, the cathode fall, and they can see here the negative glow and then the positive column. But for first, it looks like very homogeneous, this tube. But it is not real homogeneous, and I hope we can see it. Yeah, and I hope you can see it, at least the people here. Maybe could you look through the mirror with the camera? If you look carefully, or after the lecture, you can come to here and look. So you see dark and bright stripes. I hope you can see it. Yeah? Do you see it? So that means it's a stroboscopic effect by this rotating mirror. There are moving striations in the discharge, which we cannot see with our eyes. It's too fast. But with this stroboscopic effect, so there are striations moving through the gas discharge, and which have some interesting properties. I can inspect later. And if we have light in such discharge tubes, we can use it for a lot of kinds for application. I speak only about the low discharge. There exists a lot of other discharge types, of course, and it is often used for illumination, for lamps, but also for energy transformers, material transformation, think about ozone generation and so on. Of course, for surface treatment, deposition of thin films, etching of thin films, modification of surfaces and so on. Plasmas can be used as particle sources, ion sources and ion beam sources for surface treatment, again, or for space thrusters, or as ideas for generators, MHD generators. But a large market, or a huge market of plasma application, is the lighting technology for illumination, and this illustrates what I said about illumination. Coming only shortly back to this experiment, with the naked eyes, it seems to be more or less homogeneous, but there are ionization waves traveling from the anode to the cathode, and that can be made visible by this. Visible by this stroboscopic effect. But these striations, these moving striations, exist only in a very narrow range of gas pressure and discharge power. Now it can be seen again. Yeah, and it's very strange, and I have a watcher, he did a lot of work on that. We'll not go into detail. So we know, of course, dispersion relations, and there's no dispersion if the group and the phase velocity are the same. Normal dispersion, if you have this relation, and anomalous dispersion, if you have this relation. But here, we can have a kind of exotic dispersion, where we have this strange relation between the group and phase velocities traveling from the anode to the cathode, and compared with water waves, we have here this, we can have an amplification, and we have the different directions of the velocities in this traveling ionization waves, or it's forming this moving reactions. This is an interesting effect. Okay, then I will come to another kind, and I'd like to cite Michael Faraday, who said he also was working on gas discharges, as you know, of course, on sparks and also on gas discharge. At that time, there were the first vacuum tubes, good vacuum tubes, and batteries or power supplies. So he started this experiment, and he pointed out that form of the gas discharge which appears as a glow is very peculiar and beautiful. The dilution of the air enhances wonderfully the glow phenomenon. So also he described this is very nice, very beautiful. I also think this is true, and I will show you the discharge tube with now this standing striations, which have been already investigated and described in the middle of the 19th century, for instance here by Theodor Meyer, about the striations. And this experiment has been or have been done in Bonn behind the Geissler tubes. You probably know he was a famous glass blower, and he could make these nice tubes with good vacuum. And then Hittorf was in that time in Bonn, and they worked together on these discharge tubes. And they described this nice standing striations, and I like to show you such striations too. So here we have standing striations as described by this guy in the book. This is a discharge in hydrogen. And under some conditions, you can have instead this homogeneous column, this homogeneous flow discharge. You can have this striated flow discharge. It depends the distance of the striations on the power. And sometimes, even now, you can have double layers, like here. Back to the lower voltage distributions, and very, very simple. It's not an exact description, but here you have the cathode fall. Of course, the electrons there have to gain sufficient energy in order to excite the gas, and then they lose a little bit of energy and accelerate it again. And this is a kind of a Frank Hertz experiment, where you can see the structure or the quantum structure of energies for this discharge. And also what you can see is that this is the tube has different diameters, and when the diameter is large, the distance between the striations is larger than the distance between the striations where the tube is narrow. So obviously there is an interaction between the glass wall, the inner glass wall, which is on floating potential, of course, and the volume, the bulk of the plasma. So this is a volume to surface effect, which influences or which affects the distance of the striations. Yeah, standing striations as they have been described already by Geissler and other people. And I can still show you the next tube where I have two diameters. Maybe this effect is even better observable in this tube. So we have here two diameters, large one and a small one, and then you can perfectly see the distances between the three. I think it's visible also from the row in the back. Yeah, this is what I said. It's a kind of Hertz experiment which we know. And there was a Dutch physicist, Holz and Osterholz, who also described this phenomena and tried to describe the standing striations in light of this effect already in 1921. Here, again, I have this discharge tube, as seen here. But not only in the discharge tube, also in other experiments you can see these striations, and Lord Dinescu, he gave me some pictures. He had an experiment with a piece on an electrode with different gaps. Yeah? You see the gap is different in this and depth. And here he also has this standing striations, and depending on that here, in the large gaps he has large distances, and in the small gaps, like here, he has small distances between the striations. Also there they occur, and that's important, of course, to know in order to treat this surface of these gaps. And also that there is a field
a weak field, electric field between these variations, we can see in this experiment, and a lot of people are doing that today. There was a contribution of a Russian colleague here of dust particles, confined dust particles in striations, and here you may see it, here are the striations, and if we inject dust particles into this discharge and illuminate the dust particles by a laser, then you can see that the dust is levitated in the front of the striations where we have a weak electric field, and this electric field, because the particles are charged, this electric field balances the gravity of the particles. Okay, here again, I copied a slide from this old book from Meyer, and really they observed a lot of different modifications of this striations. There are transition regimes between striations and diffuse discharges, and depending on the gas mixture in the discharge, they have different colors, of course. The next experiment where we can use gas discharges or gas discharges has been often used is for so-called catapholysis, for the separation of gas mixtures. I have here a very long and narrow discharge tube. The diameter is only 1 centimeter or even less. And there is a mixture of neon and krypton, I guess, in the tube. And if we switch on the discharge tube, I have to change the heuristics. So at first it looks in this orange or pink orange color, the typical neon color. But if we wait for a certain time, we can see a difference in the color of this discharge tube, because also in a very short way, we have a mixture here of neon and xenon, and they have different ionization potential. And the one gas with the lower ionization potential travels to the cathode at first and recombines at the cathode and will be collected at the cathode. So this is the idea of gas separation, and this we can see. If we wait for a longer time, you maybe already see this is here still at the anode orange, and here it starts to get more pink, to have a more pink color. Here this is the result. If we wait for 10 minutes or a quarter, then you can see it much, much better, but I will not wait for it. So this is, and because it is very narrow, so the back diffusion is restricted, it is heavy for back diffusion, so the one gas will more or less be collected here, and the other gas more or less in the direction of the anode. This is only a very short explanation, but the gas often be used for gas separation called catapholysis. You can already see, I guess, the color here is another color than there. Okay, so, but plasma is also used for a lot of other things, for a lot of other applications, for instance, etching of semiconductors. This is a typical processing reactor, an RF reactor, small structures. This is even a large structure. Nowadays, they have structures of 100 nanometers, or even less, which they can etch with a very high aspect ratio for processors and so on, which we use in our computers or in our mobile phones. Or this is another RF discharge. Here again you can see the dark space or the cheese in front of the electrode quite nice, which we use to coat microparticles. Here we had some iron microparticles which we coated in a plasma with an additional aluminium layer for toner particles or for catalytic processes and so on. And for cleaning of surfaces. And once we had a project together with the Deutsche Airbus, with the aircraft industry, and there we had to clean some materials of aluminium materials which are typically used in construction of aircraft. So we did it, but unfortunately it's not a real aircraft. It's only a toy in our plasma chamber. But you can see if they are contaminated with grease or with oil, then they can very efficiently be cleaned in an oxygen-containing plasma, and sometimes a lot of heat is released due to this chemical reactions at the surfaces, the destruction of the hydrocarbons. Okay, now it is an appetizing block. If you want to know more about gaseous charges, low temperature plasmas, recently we published two books of low temperature plasmas. There's a lot of application and basics of this plasma gaseous charges inside. Okay, there are some experiments in the laboratory, how to use plasmas, gaseous charges in the laboratory. Now we will start our journey. Earth and solar system, and of course the most common or the most famous gas discharge is lightning and thunderstorm, and our ancestors obviously they took the fire from this flashes from the lightnings and the thunderstorms and sometimes huge amount of energy is released. There exist different types of lightnings. Mostly we have the so-called negative lightnings between cloud and earth, but sometimes there also exist the positive, and very rare we have the earth cloud lightnings. The physics of lightnings is a lecture, separate lecture. I will not go into details. The lightning or the thunderstorm is, of course, if it is hot and humid, and then the humid air goes to in a higher altitude. Then again, like here, charges are separated by this friction, by this movement, and if the charges are separated and there's a large field between the separated charges, then sometimes it depends on temperature, on humidity, and so on, then there's a big breakthrough between the charges, between the voltage which has been, or the potential which has been formed, and we can see a lightning. There are different types, the cloud bursts and just cloud lightnings, which are very nice, but sometimes also flashes or lightnings are not only between the clouds and the earth, or between the clouds. Sometimes also has been observed lightnings from the clouds up to the ionosphere, and I took this movie from Victor Pasco from Penn State University. You can see this is here the horizon with the clouds, and here in the higher altitude is the ionosphere, and there you can see sometimes lightning going into the ionosphere. Sometimes you can also do very wrong or very stupid things with such discharges, with artificial lightnings in laboratory, as I did, and I want to show you this. This was in the Greifswald lecture hall, and this is the influence machine where the charges are separated. Here are the lime jars and here are the tips. That was very strange. So we shouldn't do that such stupid things. But very tiny discharges or lightnings you can have in an atmospheric discharge, maybe in a dielectric barrier discharges. A lot of scientists here in the auditorium are working in atmospheric discharges and dielectric barrier discharges. And this is a photograph perpendicular to the discharge channels with a high-speed camera. We have here the electrodes and here the dielectric, where the charges are built up. And then sometimes we have this breakthrough, and it is very statistical. So you can treat surfaces, and you can use it also for illumination again, maybe in plasma screens and so on, because there's a high amount of UV released. There are only, of course, very short duration of a single discharge. And the diameter is about 700 micrometers of this, but the density, the plasma density is quite high, and the UV radiation might be quite high, so it is used for a lot of applications. And here you can see the UV by this streamers or by this discharges. We put it simply here some fluorescent particles, like used in a TV, in a plasma TV or in a fluorescent lamps. And usually you cannot see this fluorescent particles, but here we look now through the transparent electrode. You hear a lot of the discharges, the small discharge channels, and the UV excites the phosphor particles, the fluorescent particles, which you can see now here. Okay, the next natural plasma on Earth is the polar or polarized auroras. Mostly you can see it in the northern hemisphere or the very southern hemisphere, of course, or at high altitudes, but sometimes you even can see such auroras here in middle Europe if there are strong solar wind coming from the sun. Then you can observe also whole auroras here in Europe, like in April of 2000. This is on the island of Usedom, the northeast of Germany. Here's the Baltic Sea with the sea bridge. And here you can see wonderful the lights of the aurora. The red is coming from the nitrogen, this yellowish green from the oxygen in high altitude, about 100. Height. Of course, if you look with a satellite into the direction of the North Pole, which is here sometimes, they can observe, this is the wrong color, they can observe really gleaming rings formed surrounding the pole. What's the reason? Of course, yes, you know. The reason is the solar wind. And the solar wind is a special plasma, radially moving current of charge carriers coming from the sun and traveling through the solar system. Like here, this is a stupid animation because the solar wind does not only go to the Earth, so it goes into each direction here. But it deforms the magnetic field of the Earth, the magnetosphere, and where the magnetic field is very dense, near the poles, the particles are captured and accelerated along the magnetic field lines, and then the accelerated charge carriers, they collide with the molecules and atoms in the higher atmosphere and make this aurora. So that means if there is a strong solar wind, a strong plasma coming from the sun, then we can expect a lot of auroras. This illustrates the interaction between a plasma and a magnetic field. And also I want to show you an experiment on this. This is based on the idea of Michael Faraday, who did this experiment in the 40s of the 19th century. And he simply took here a rim of mercury. This was filled with mercury. And then he connected this by wires with a battery. And there was a current flowing here along this wire through the mercury rim and back to the battery. And if he injected a magnet, then this started to rotate. This is the principle of an electromotor, of course, and it can rotate because it's in the liquid in the mercury. Nowadays, we cannot use mercury here on a desk in an open style, so we make this in another style with a plasma. I have here a discharge tube now. Maybe I can show over here. It is now vice versa, but it doesn't matter. This is here the cathode, this is the anode, and the cathode is this ring of mercury. And now we have not a wire from metal, now we have a wire from plasma between the electrodes. You see it starts to rotate. If I turn it, then it rotates in the other direction. It's the same principle for an electromotor which has been used by Faraday. Unfortunately, there's a little bit of convection by the Faraday's why, so that's a guess is moving, but it can be seen quite. So you can really show this interaction between the magnetic field and the plasma, which is used here or based on the idea of Faraday. We can even make another experiment in order to demonstrate the interaction of a plasma wire with a magnetic field. Let's take this discharge tube. And these are in principle two tubes, an inner tube and an outer tube, and only the space between the tubes is evacuated. And there's a gas of maybe 34 argon gas, so that I will have a plasma wire between the discharge, between the glass tubes.
It is possible to.
Okay, could you switch? No, you could switch. Okay, I will continue. Such auroras which we can observe on Earth are also common on the giant planets, maybe on Jupiter or Saturnus, as here observed by the Hubble Space Telescope, and also even if they are much more far from the Sun than the Earth, there is a strong solar wind interacting with the magnetic field of the giant planets and forming this auroras. This. And again, as I mentioned, the source of this auroras are the solar wind, which can be seen here very nice, taken from the SOHO satellite, that are the so-called coronal mass ejections. This is the Sun, and this is taken with a coronal graph, so the photosphere of the Sun is hidden, and you can see the corona, and sometimes you have huge bulbs in the corona which feed the solar wind, and the velocity of the solar wind is in the order of some 100 kilometers per second, depending on the cycle of the solar activity, and depending on the polar direction or in the equatorial plane of the Sun. Why do we know that? We know that from such satellites like Ulysses or like SOHO, and so Ulysses traveled along the or across the poles of the Sun, so Ulysses could also observe the solar wind into the direction of the poles, that means perpendicular to the ecliptic or equatorial. The interaction of the solar wind can also be observed quite nice with comets, with the tail of the comets. So the solar wind, the charge carriers of the solar wind interact with the small dust particles, this is by radiation, and with the gas molecules released from the comets, and which can excite the gas atoms. Here we have the dust tail, and here we have the plasma tail, or the gas tail due to the interaction. So that means that the Sun is release the horizon into this direction. So there's a radial flux of charge carriers from the Sun interacting with the tail of the comets. Okay, the source of all these nice effects in the solar system is the Sun. And I have taken these pictures by the Sun. The effect that the Sun becomes red and flat in sunset or sunrise, of course, it has nothing to do with the Sun itself. This is only an influence or effect of our atmosphere by refraction, by extinction, which changes the color and the shape of the Sun. Okay, in the Sun we can find several kinds of plasmas. In the inner, in the center of the Sun, we can find a very hot thermal, completely ionized plasma, the fusion plasma, the burning fusion plasma. And at the surface, we can find the photosphere where the plasma radiates, and the radiation is coming as light or as heat also to the Earth. And above the photosphere, we have the corona, which is also a kind of a plasma, a very hot and very, very thin plasma again. If you look into the photosphere by details, then we can observe structures in the photosphere. I took this photo here. This is the so-called umbra and penumbra, the solar spots or the sunspots, which depends on the activity of the Sun. With larger telescopes, you can see structures in the solar spots, and you can observe this graininess. It's like some rise or something like that. The origin of the solar spots are the magnetic fields on the Sun. We have very strong local magnetic fields at the Sun, not a very high global field, but very local, strong local fields, and in the neighborhood of these local fields we can observe the spots. I will go into details, and thus the photosphere, we can see the chromosphere, and in the chromosphere sometimes we have these ejections or we have prominences, which again you can see these loops of prominences
which tells us that there are magnetic fields, yeah? The charge carriers moving along the magnetic fields. Here are the magnetic fields are the footprints of these prominences, and they move along the magnetic fields. Usually you can only see these light prominences in the chromosphere during eclipse, during the sun eclipse, or with special instruments, of course. And for instance, with a very small H-alpha filter, which I took in order to make this photograph, here we can see such prominences. And this was about 40,000 kilometers above the surface of the sun. And if the energy is large enough, then it can be traveled through the solar system and feeding the solar wind again. I skip this. And then here again is a cut of the sun, and we would like to have such an artificial sun here on Earth, of course, because then we could solve our energy problem, and the sun can do it, of course, since a very, very long time, and also for a long future, by fusion, because the pressure and the temperature is very high in the center of the sun due to the gravity, the large mass of the sun. But here on Earth, we cannot have such large mass in order to confine the plasma. We have to look for other shapes. Okay, very good. I will try it. Thank you very much. We want to have this on Earth, so we have to confine our plasma. As you know, a lot of people are here from the fusion community. We have to keep the plasma by magnetic fields, not with gravity. And there are two concepts, the Tokamak and the Stargardt concept, and here are some of the experiments which are in operation. Here is the temperature, which is not a problem. We can have temperatures higher than in the center of the sun in fusion devices or in pinches, but in order to keep this plasma for a long time stable, this is a problem. And here are the different experiments here. For instance, is the Wendelstein in Greifswald. The sun would be in this diagram somewhat here, yeah, in the temperature about 10 million degrees, but much higher confinement time. And the ITER, International Thermonuclear Reactor, which will start hopefully soon in France, should be here, and there we will have this breakthrough. Okay, and if you look now, you could switch off the light, please. If you look into the stars, into the sky, in the night, we see a lot of stars, and all the stars which we can observe are more or less very similar to our sun, very large plasma spheres like our sun. So if you look to the space, you see a lot of triangle of the spring, and here we have the triangle of the summer between Deneb, Vega, and Ada. Here you can see now. These points are no stars, of course, that are the planets. We have here in the west the set of Mars and Saturnus in Leo, and Jupiter still rises at the eastern part of the horizon. So, but all these constellations, all these points, the stars, are plasma spheres in principle, if you look into the sky. Okay, coming back to this experiment, maybe, hopefully, now it works. And due to the convection, it wants the plasma
wants to go up, but it cannot go up because the, here's the tube. Okay, but now again the interaction with a magnetic field, and here I have a simple magnet, and if I insert this magnet here at the cathode, this plasma wire starts to take you in the Lorentz force, and it moves along this charge tube into the direction of the anode. Of course, if I change it, then it starts in the other direction. If I do it at the anode, again, we have the Lorentz force, it rotates, but it doesn't move. So also the direction of the current is important. Here it doesn't work. And you can treat this charge, this is only a plasma wire, let's say a plasma wire, like a spring, like a metal spring. You can have oscillations between the parts of the spring, you can look for dispersion relations and so on. It behaves like a spring, like a metallic spring, something like this. So this is very nice, and only in order to show the interaction between the magnetic field and the plasma. Okay, skip this. And coming to the end, now we have seen that our sun and the stars are perfect or very huge plasma balls, plasma spheres. But the question is, what is with the material, with the space between the stars? And this is not really empty, the space also there you can find a plasma, and for instance if a star dies, yeah, then at the end of the life of a star, it goes up to a giant star, to a red giant, due to the processes in the interior of the star, maybe like this, and then there's a huge stellar wind, of course, and then it loses a lot of material, of gas, and then suddenly the inner part, the core of the star, collapses to a white dwarf, or even worse, to a black hole or a neutron star. But then we have a shock wave, and the shock wave blows this plasma from the star, and this is the material for new stars. This is the plasma which forms interstellar clouds, which are the place for the birthplace for new stars, like it can be seen here in this Helix nebula. In a far future, also our sun will behave like this. But such so-called planetary nebula are also quite nice. Unfortunately, you cannot see it by your naked eyes. You have to use a large telescope or a long photograph with long exposure. The most famous is the Ring Nebula in the constellation of Lyra. You may observe in summertime here. And the star is very small, but this is the plasma from the wind blown from the dying star. And after some 10,000 or 100,000 years, it is very, very thin and you cannot observe. But this forms new clouds, new interstellar clouds, which is the material, the birth material for new stars. So compared to our plasmas in laboratory, this is very, very thin. It is nearly vacuum, but it is a form of or a kind of plasma. Maybe the most famous cloud of this interstellar medium or material is the nebula in Orion, which you can observe in winter. Here are the Belt stars of Orion, and not far from the Belt stars, you can see with your eyes the very part. This is the nebula, and this is a kind of an interstellar cloud. And in this interstellar plasma cloud, we can find very young stars. That means they are already some billion years old, but compared to the sun, which is some billion years old, they are very, very young. This is a detail of this nebula from Orion. This is taken again from the Hubble Space Telescope, and if we look through our telescope, which is here located on top of the institute, and in Greifswald, also we can take this structure, of course not so much details, but we can see the shop front, we can see here the stars, and the dark space which is formed by dust in these clouds. And the dust in this interstellar clouds has a very important, or plays a very important role for cooling of the clouds and also for forming of larger molecules, because the dust particles in the clouds are the first solids in the space, and on the surface of the dust particles, large molecules are formed, which are very important for us, of course. Here, maybe this is a structure of such a dust molecule, and such dust particles, we can also form in laboratory plasmas. This is an RF plasma. I took a filter, so you cannot see the plasma glow, but you can see here the particles. The particles are grown in an acetylene plasma. Here's the RF electrode, and this is the sheath, and they are confined at the sheath edge, where the force is balanced. Here are already some larger particles, which are grown, carbon particles, which are grown in the plasma, and these particles are in the order of some 20, 50, 200 nanometers, and if we change the plasma parameters, we can get some different structures. Here we can observe very nice the sheath edge, but here we can have vortices between the powered and the grounded electrode, and we can have such voids in the plasma, because in the plasma we have the plasma potential, the most positive potential, and the ions are flowing to the walls, and by ion drag the small particles are pushed by the ions, so we can have the structures. And the structures look like a very small Orion nebula in the laboratory, in the reactor, but on a quite other time and length scale, of course. Yeah, still some nice pictures of such interstellar clouds, even nebula with different structures taken from the Hubble Space Telescope, or here near the star Deneb in the constellation of Swan, the so-called Northern American Nebula. This is the United States, Florida, New Mexico, therefore it's called the North American Nebula. And the red color, of course, tells us it is hydrogen. It's the 656 H alpha line of the hydrogen, which is excited by the stars in the neighborhood, the stars in the neighborhood. And here again, Orion. This is one star of the belt. This is a hydrogen cloud, plasma cloud. And here is the so-called Horsehead Nebula. This is dust, which is in front of the plasma cloud and which absorbs the radiation of this plasma cloud due to the dust particles. Okay, and if we still go deeper into the space, if we leave our galaxy, our Milky Way, then even the space between the galaxies is not empty. And if we look with a Hubble Space Telescope into the direction of the Big Dipper here, then, and we zoom into the space with the Hubble Space Telescope, then we see again and again islands of stars like our Milky Way, such flat islands of stars. And all of these disks are galaxies like our Milky Way, with millions of stars, which with millions of plasma spheres. And between the galaxies, if there are particles traveling between the galaxies, there can be jets and magnetic fields, and they are accelerated, and because there is nearly a perfect vacuum, they can be accelerated to a huge energies, much higher than we can obtain in the accelerators in CERN or so. So this is a very, very simple, a very high energetic anisotropic plasma, if you want to say. Okay, coming to an end, I want to summarize. I tried to do the journey through the world of plasmas, from the laboratory plasmas, the small laboratory plasmas, which can be used for application, to the very large interstellar clouds, the interstellar plasma clouds. But at the end, I will want to show you a discharge tube that we can change by the voltage, the shape of the discharge, This is a discharge in krypton at a relatively high pressure, about 80 or 104. And if we have a certain voltage now here, 1.8 kV, then this is a homogeneous discharge. Yeah? A homogeneous discharge, the color typical for krypton, very homogeneous. And if you increase a little bit the voltage, we can change the discharge from this diffusive or diffuse mode or homogeneous mode to a restricted mode. And you can see here the convection, we call it also smoke discharge, like in the chimney, because it's the pressure is relatively high, the gas is heated and moving to this electrode, and so we can see this behavior like a smoke discharge, and now we have the transition regime between this diffuse or the homogeneous discharge to this confined discharge, and if we still increase it, then we have acquired only this restricted discharge, so we change this the voltage, of course, the power consumption, and the shape of the electron distribution function in this charge, and also the shape of this discharge changes, as you can see also in the photograph. Okay, so I think discharges not only, or gas discharges are not only important for science, for plasma science, they can also be quite nice, very aesthetic, can have nice forms, as already Michael Faraday pointed out, and I tried to show you some examples of this discharges, and coming to an end, to summarize, I would say that plasma exists in all of its modifications, from the very dense and thermal plasmas, fusion plasmas inside the stars, inside the sun, to the strongly unisothermal and high energetic plasma of the interstellar space or intergalactic space. The existence of this cosmic plasma is based on the interaction between radiation and gas and matter, mostly, so that if we look around on Earth, plasma is very rare. So the usual people on street, they don't know really what is plasma. Of course, they know plasma is green now. But solid, liquid, and gaseous, they are common, but not the gas. And in the space, in the universe, it's vice versa. Plasma is the common state of matter, and we can only find very rarely solids or liquids. The plasma is the common state of matter in space. It's the most dominant existence of matter in the visible universe. And if you want to say, you could point out that even our neighborhood, our surroundings, and also we are nothing else than a condensate of this universal plasma. Thank you very much.
That was,
I guess it was Meyer and Hittorf and Geisler in 1980, 1840, 1885. So that's today a little bit faster, but that was a good paper. So we have already. We're sitting in the box.
Yeah. Thank you, Professor.
Excuse me, please. I would like to know what you think about the existence of the ball lightning.
Which lightning?
Ball lightning.
Ball lightning. You think the ball is the ball? Oh, yes. Yeah. It is often described in literature, the ball lightning, and there's a strong discussion between several groups, and I mentioned there are some groups which try to make experiments. I guess the group in Berlin, they do it with water. And there's an American group with some silicon wrapper or something like that in order to excite the particles. So that it should be that the field is can be, at least for a certain time, some seconds or even tens of seconds, can be stabilized, this plasma bulb. But I never did such experiments and didn't make research. So the problem is, often it is described, but the real, what they call bulb lightning, yeah, it is of course hard to catch it and to make measurements. That's one of the problems. We can have different theories for that, and so they try to start with some first experiments, but these experiments are under very certain conditions that are not the conditions then where the usually the bulb lightnings is observed in the neighborhood of lightnings or something.
Okay. If I have no argon and krypton in my kitchen, but I have microwave oven, what is the easiest way to show to my son this
discovery? Take a bulb.
Okay.
But remove the metallic part. It works.
Take a candle flame. That works much better.
Okay.
Yeah, that's also possible. And also we sometimes try, but let's take a plastic bottle and try to evacuate it. And if you have strong lungs, you can. It works. This was 5% but it starts some tens.
Another question. Thank you once more.